We're going to get started. We're going to call to order the Committee on Public Safety Policy and Oversight. Today is Tuesday, February 9th. We do have a quorum. Members, the first item on the agenda is House File 1457, which is Representative Johnson's bill. This is an unfunded mandates bill that we already passed out of this committee. It went to the floor, and then because we adjourned, it came back to the committee. So Representative Johnson moves that House File 1457 be recommended to pass and be resent to the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn, do you know where your bill goes next?
Great.
I would move that House File 2616 be recommended to pass and be sent to the general register. Representative Kahn.
Yeah. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here with you today, and I'm going to have most of the talking is going to be done by Dorian Grilley from the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. This bill was brought to me by the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota, but I actually have a history with this bill going back to 2003. For those of you who remember former members of the legislature, this was an unlikely Workman Kahn coalition, which was probably the first and last time ever. And it was what happened was that Representative Workman had this bill for motorcycles, and he was having trouble getting enough votes to pass it. And I said, you know, if you add bicycles to it, I'll get you the bicyclist votes to pass it. So I proceeded to do it. So this bill, so the law 169.06 subdivision 9 passed the House with exactly the language you see before you see before you, and this hasn't happened to me often in the legislature, but I didn't follow it through to the level that I should have, and somehow it came back from conference committee with the bicycles dropped off the roadside. So we're now, how many years later? 7 years later, trying to put them back in. But I'll give the facts. I'll let my colleague present the information on that. So you see, the only thing the bill does is just add gives bicycles the same things that motorcycles have had for the last 7 years.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilley. I'm the Executive Director of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. And I'll keep my comments pretty brief here, since I think it's pretty straightforward. But a little background, the Bicycle Alliance is a new statewide bicycling organization with a mission to be a leader in bicycle advocacy, education, and efforts to make Minnesota more bike-friendly so more people bicycle more often. We are a year old now, and our membership is growing rapidly statewide. We are passionate about educating cyclists on how to ride safely on the roads and trails and in traffic. And yes, we do emphasize following the traffic regulations and stopping at stop signs. To that end, we've identified this problem that well-educated cyclists following the rules of the road often encounter. And like motorcycles, we are often in a situation where we're unable to trip a traffic signal to turn from red to green. They build bicycles out of a lot of plastic nowadays, so the magnetic loop detectors and other ones don't work very well. Therefore, we asked Representative Kahn to reintroduce this bill several years later, now that the bicyclists have a presence in Minnesota. This is an issue with bicyclists because it has the potential to create safety hazards, clog intersections, and inconvenience other vehicle drivers that are behind bicyclists. This has happened to me regularly on my ride to work in downtown St. Paul, and I'd be in the left turn lane and pull up into the crosswalk and try and motion a car to come and go over the loop detector so we could both go through on a green arrow. Very often the cars were too polite to come close enough to actually do that, so I guess that's Minnesota. But this is something that should not happen if a bicyclist is following the rules of the road and behaving like the driver of a vehicle. There appears to be no reason this was not passed in 2003 other than the Senate didn't put it in, and we're going to assure that happens this year. I also wanted to point out that this is current law in many other states. Bicycling in Minnesota continues to increase as a mode of transportation, and it's being encouraged by all levels of government and health health insurance companies, as many of you know, because it's of its benefits to individual health, the environment, and to communities. There will be more and more experienced bicyclists if we have our way that follow the rules of the road and use turn lanes and signalized intersections. And making this simple change would improve conditions for all vehicle drivers. So thank you.
Questions from members? Seeing none, I renew my motion. Oh, excuse me. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 2616 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passed. Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Chair Hillstrom, would you like to move House File 2470?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House File 2470 be recommended to pass and be sent to Finance with the recommendation that it be re-referred to Transportation Finance. Hopefully, members will take a look at the amendment that I'm going to propose, which is going to require it to go to Transportation and put it on. Members, we're going to talk about the bill, but I received an email from Jared Jordahl through the Department of Public Safety late last night, which missed the 24-hour deadline, asking that we expand the bill to cover driver's license and state-issued IDs. And so if the committee is fine with, you know, waiving that 24-hour deadline, I'll ask you to put that on. But first we'll talk about the bill, and then we'll do the amendments.
Received, Madam Chair.
Members, I'm going to ask the Attorney General's office, who brought me this bill, to describe the bill and talk you through it.
Sure. Thank you for coming today to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Al Drazil, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General for the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, thank you, and members of the committee, thank you for considering this bill. You are, I am sure, all aware of the growing problem of identity theft in Minnesota and around the country, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time telling you about that, because if you don't know about it, you get mailings from credit card companies asking you to buy protection rather frequently, and I'm sure that raises your level of interest in it. But it is a growing crime, and one of the features of this crime is that it is very technologically based, and people are always developing new ways to technologically find out information about you, and it is necessary to therefore keep looking at new ways for law enforcement to respond. The issues of skimmers is one that is just coming into Minnesota, but has been a major issue in other parts of the country. Skimmers are devices that record credit card information off the magnetic strip on the card. And what makes them particularly insidious is that they are very small. A handheld skimmer is about the size of a Bic lighter. So it is very easy for somebody who is working in the food or hospitality industry to palm one. And even while they are talking to you at your table, they can simply run the strip through the skimmer, and you're probably not even aware of it. They don't necessarily have to go hide. They can do everything out in the open, and if you don't realize they have this tiny device palmed in their hand, you're not going to know. They have just stolen all of your credit card information. The other common form of skimmer is one that is placed over the outlet to an ATM, and it is designed to look exactly like the outlet of the ATM, except it's now about a quarter of an inch thicker. And if you aren't really paying attention, you don't know that as you put your cash card or your credit card into the ATM, not only is the ATM reading it, but the skimmer is also reading it. And because it is so easy to conceal these devices, so easy to capture the credit card information and the driver's license information as indicated in the proposed amendment, we are asking that you make possession of these devices with intent to commit a crime a felony. And that's the rationale for the bill, and that's what the bill does.
Mr. Zisdrill, I just have a question or more of a comment, but are you finding that these instruments are being used more as part of an organized crime?
I don't know that I can answer that. Certainly, the devices, you know, once you skim, you then need a re-encoder. That is, you have to, you know, take the skimmer, plug it into a machine, a computer, as it were, that will read the information off of it, and that will then frequently make a new credit card. What they do is they duplicate your credit card, but then change the name on it, and they give it out, or they, instance that occurred in Minnesota, they brought a bunch of gift cards with it, and thereby converting, you know, a one credit card into numerous gift cards that they used. So we found that there are organized groups, but whether or not I would call it organized crime, I don't know. It's very seldom one person doing it, I think.
Madam Chair, would you like to move an amendment to get the bill in the shape you would like?
Well, the first amendment is the A1 amendment, and that is just a technical amendment found by nonpartisan staff.
Okay. Are you moving that amendment?
I would move the A1 amendment.
Any questions or comments regarding the A1 amendment at this time? See no further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, then I would move the A3 amendment if there's no objection from anyone on the committee, which would then include driver's license or state-issued identification cards, which was a request from the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Any questions, comments about the A3 amendment from members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is getting to be a very serious issue, and based on the pictures that you now have at your table, you can see they're very small. I think it's really important that we take a look at this issue and we pass it and allow folks to prosecute for this for having this material. We have requested a fiscal note, Representative Paymar. It does have to go to transportation first because we've now added driver's licenses and it becomes a transportation issue. So I would anticipate it'll go to transportation, finance, end up down to policy, back to finance, and then back to Representative Paymar's committee. So I encourage your support. See if there's anyone in the audience.
Yep. Is any members have a question? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, Ms. Representative Hillstrom, how many other states have gone ahead with this type of legislation to
I can count
go after
for
this?
Madam Chair, I will
Representative
have,
Hillstrom?
Mr. Drizel testified to that. He's currently counting the number of states. We could read them to you as well.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Drizel.
Representative Abrams, I count 30.
There's 30 states that have gone and have passed this legislation already?
Comparable legislation, yes.
Comparable. And, Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, you said you've asked for a fiscal note on this particular one. Is there any indication of what this might cost just without having asked for a fiscal note? Does your testifier have any idea?
Well, Mr. Anderson, this is a policy committee, but I'll let Representative Hillstrom explain why she already asked for the fiscal note.
Representative Anderson, what we're hoping is that these folks are already being charged as something else, so we're hoping that it has a minimal bed impact, but anytime you are making something a felony that isn't currently a felony, you have to ask for a fiscal note to see if it's going to cost anything.
Representative Anderson, any further questions?
Yes, Madam Chair. Hillstrom or testifier, are these scanners also used for like pull tab funds and things like that?
Representative Hillstrom or Mr. Drizel?
Not that I'm aware of, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know of that occurring, but anything that has a magnetic strip that has information on it could be captured. That information could be captured by one of these skimmers. And so you know, if there's something in the pull tab operation where they're reading magnetic strips, yes, that information could be captured.
And Representative Anderson, I believe that this came from public safety because it came from the gambling control board, so I'm not certain the addition of the driver's license why that was the case, but that's kind of how it came up to us.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Olin, no further questions? Any other questions for members? Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 2470 as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor, or would you like to renew your motion, Madam Chair?
I would renew my motion that House File 2470 as amended be recommended to pass and be sent to Finance with the recommendation that go to Transportation Finance.
Great. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Bill passes.
Thank you, members. Members, before we get to the next item on the agenda, which is the sentencing guidelines, we need to approve all the minutes from all the meetings that we had this summer. So can I get a motion to approve the minutes of April 2nd?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Bingham moves the minutes of April 2nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And a motion for September 22nd?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenthal moves the minutes for September 22nd. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And August 26th?
So moved.
Representative Szymanski moved those minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. October 7th, Representative Bingham.
I will move those minutes.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And the last one, October 29th, Representative Olin. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Next is an overview on the 2010 Sentencing Guidelines Annual Report to the Legislature. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
I'm Susanna Legro. I'm the Executive Director of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edblatt. I'm the Isanti County Attorney and the Chair of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission.
I do have Linda McBrayer from my office who's going to run the projector, but she's not going to testify.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission was created by the Minnesota Legislature in 1978 for the purpose of developing a model for rational and consistent sentencing standards for felony offenders in the state of Minnesota. It became effective for offenses that were committed on or after May 1st, 1980. There are multiple goals and purposes of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines, including public safety concerns by ensuring that violent offenders are incarcerated, uniformity in that similar crimes and similar criminal histories receive similar sentences, proportionality in that offenses are based upon severity levels and criminal histories, truth in sentencing by having a fixed known sentence up front, and coordinating policies with correctional resources so that there is some degree of predictability with the prison population. The two basic responsibilities of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission are to maintain the guideline structure by annually modifying the guidelines in response to legislative changes, changes in case law, as well as changes by issues raised by interested parties, and the responsibility of collecting and analyzing data as actual sentencing practices, comparing those to sentences recommended by the guidelines. We have, over the years, provided a rational structure promoting uniform and proportional sentencing, which helps to ensure sentencing decisions are not influenced by factors such as race, gender, or the exercise of an individual's constitutional rights. We have provided a standard of measuring how well the system is working by comparing typical cases versus the departure cases. We have provided a neutral sentencing structure as well as a determinate sentencing system.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, this afternoon we're going to present a few statistics to you We're also going to discuss the major modifications that were made to the guidelines that are effective in 2009, and then also ones that would be effective in 2010, and then we're also going to talk a little bit about staff activities. The first slide in front of you is the number of felony convictions between the years 1981 to 2008. And as you can see from the graph up there, the progression between the number of offenders increased fairly steadily between 1981 and 2001. In some years, the numbers decreased, but it was a fairly steady progression. Starting in 2001, we did experience a large growth in the number of felony convictions between 2001 and 2004. The number of cases did increase in 06 and 07. And starting in 2007, the number of felony convictions decreased by 1.7%. In 2008, that number further decreased by 4.8%. And a cursory look at our 2009 data would indicate, again, that the number of felony convictions also will be decreased. The next slide basically shows the type of charge overall by offense type. And if you look at each offense type, you'll mainly see that the increase was mainly due to the drug offenses that occurred. In 2001, we had close to 2,600 felony convictions for drug offenses. By 2002, that number had increased to around 3,400. And by 06, it was close to 4,500. Starting in 07, the number of drug convictions had decreased to close to 4,200, and in 08, it was down to 3,878. Another contributing factor for the large growth was, in addition to the drug offenses, and those I might point out were mainly the meth cases, that the felony DWI that was enacted in 2002, the first year that was enacted, we had 102 cases. By 2004, that number had increased to 860, and in 08, the number was down to 779. So we have pretty much seen a decrease in both the felony and the DWI cases. Most of the offenses, other than personal offenses, we have seen a decline in 2008. The only offenses that have pretty much been increasing, we have not seen a decrease, are the person offenses. Every year starting in 2001, that number has increased. Right now, person offenses account for almost 30% of all offenses, and that's the highest percent since 1999. There are several reasons for this growth. Part of it is that part of the increase is due to the fact that prior to 2006, we did not include first-degree murder cases in our data. We have now started to keep those. The other major increase in the person offenses can be attributed to domestic violence-related offenses. As you recall, the domestic abuse by strangulation was enacted in 2001, and in August 1st of 2005, That year we had 20 domestic abuse by strangulation cases. By 2006, that number had increased to 264, and by 2007, 315 cases. Similarly, the felony domestic assault in 2005 and 6, we had 100 cases, and by 07, we had 295, and by 08, that number had increased to 396. As you can see from the slide, of all the assault cases now, close to 40% of assault cases are domestic related. I'm going to discuss the several of the modifications based on the 2009 legislative changes. In 2009, the legislature passed the offense financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult over $35,000. The commission's past practice of ranking exploitation of vulnerable adults generally would be higher than the equivalent offense for the value of the theft. So since theft was ranked at severity level 6, the commission chose to rank the financial exploitation at a severity level 7. The range is 36 months stayed at zero criminal history to 72, presumptive prison at 6 plus criminal history points. And then if you have 3 or more criminal history points, it's a presumptive prison. Additionally, in 2009, the legislature expanded the definition of labor and sex trafficking to include receiving profit or anything of value that is derived from the offense. There were also enhanced penalties for solicitation, inducement, and promotion of prostitution if the offense is committed through engaging in sex trafficking, and there is an aggravating factor present. Because the new provision for the aggravating factor applied to prostitution offenses, both first and second degree, what the commission chose to do was add a sentence modifier so that if the aggravating factors were present, you would have, if it was first degree or second degree, 48 months added to the sentence. If the underlying offense was an attempt or conspiracy, 24 months was added to the sentence.
Representative Paymer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allegro, can you just clarify something for me? Because I was the chief author of that bill last year, and I'm proud of the bill, and I think it was the right thing to do. But I also thought at the time that we wouldn't see the bed impact take effect until, I thought, 2014. So what happened between then and now that's changed that? And can you tell me what the bed impact estimation is?
Ms. Allegra.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, I think the bed impact is referring to something that I'm going to discuss in a minute that was not the effect of the aggravating factors, but the decision by the commission to re-rank or to move certain prostitution offenses from the regular grid to the sex offender grid.
And Madam Chair, so Ms. Allegro, so this bill then encompasses that grid change that you made? Is that, I'm just trying to get it, because I understand that there's now a bed impact, and I am.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, the aggravating factor did not result in the bed impact. The bed impact was, that started the discussion as to whether the prostitution offenses should remain on the regular grid or be moved to the sex offender grid. So the commission decided to move the prostitution offenses to the sex offender grid, and that was where the bed impact came in. It wasn't as a result of the aggravating factors, if that makes sense. It was a separate action by the commission, so not in response.
So it was something you did rather than what we did.
That's correct. I'm sorry. Yes, that's correct.
Representative Cole.
Well, that's an interesting, this raises an interesting point. I know we're not in Chair Paymar's Finance Committee, but I guess, Ms. Allegro, how often does that happen? Because it sounds as though the commission made an administrative decision, one that I don't necessarily disagree with, but it will have presumably long-term fiscal impacts that the legislature didn't anticipate when it passed Chair Paymar's bill. And so, or correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm concerned. I just have a fundamental concern about administrative agencies making decisions like that, and where, you know, what's the appropriate separation of powers issue, and so help me understand. Walk me through that a little bit more.
Ms. Allegro,
Madam Chair, Representative, the aggravating factors where we added the 48 months and the 24 months, that was a result of the 2009 legislation, and that went into effect in 2009. The proposed, the modifications that would move the prostitution offenses from the regular grid to the sex offender grid and would result in a bed impact, according to our calculations, that those changes are not effective. The legislature, if they chose not to follow the recommendations of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission as far as moving those offenses, could pass a bill to the contrary saying that those modifications would not go into effect. So if that makes sense.
Representative Coles.
Madam Chair, Ms. Allegra, just let me try to make sure I heard what you said. I think I do understand it. So the commission has made a recommendation. That recommendation will then become the practice in our criminal courts unless the legislature chooses to say, no, we think you got it wrong. Is that correct?
Ms. Allegra.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct on the moving the offenses to the sex offender grid. On the aggravating factors, which was the legislation, that
right.
that stands.
Representative Cole?
And then just one last question, just so I understand the move. Are we talking of the move to the sex offender grid, is that all prostitution crimes, or is that just the trafficking? And are we talking about, the guy or gal on the street who is the prostitute, maybe picked up for prostituting him or herself, or are we talking about Johns and traffickers, or is it all of them?
Ms. Allegra.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's the next slide I was going to discuss. If you want me to go ahead and do that, or do you want me to just answer questions, I'd be happy to.
Why don't you go ahead, and if we have an additional question, we'll come back to it. And members, this is the very reason they're here today.
Yep.
So, Ms. Allegra.
As you can see, these are 2010 modifications to the guidelines. So these would go into effect if there's not an action by the legislature passed to the contrary. So basically, when the public hearing was held for the to discuss the 2009 legislation and the aggravating factors, the Advocates for Human Rights, along with the Minnesota Coalition for Sexual Assault, and had asked the commission to review the rankings for prostitution offenses so they would be treated similarly to offenses on the sex offender grid. What the commission was asked to look at was the issue of the consent of an individual to being promoted in prostitution and sex trafficking, whether individuals who have had sex with minors involved in prostitution should be sentenced less severely than those not involved in prostitution. The commission reviewed the sentencing practices for these offenses. We also obtained information from the county attorneys on charging practices. And we did limit our the commission's actions to the 609.322 offenses, not the 609.324 offenses. Over the past 4 years, there were eight persons convicted for severity level 9. That's the solicitation, inducement, and promotion of prostitution, sex trafficking in the first degree, and 32 for the second degree. On the regular grid, the first degree is ranked at a severity level 9, and the second degree is severity level 5. What the commission did discuss was moving those offenders from the regular grid to the sex offender grid would result in more presumptive prison sentences and longer sentences, particularly for the second degree offenses. What the commission then adopted a proposal that would change the severity level ranking for the first degree, which involves the solicitation, inducement, and promotion of prostitution, sex trafficking involving individuals under 18, from severity level 9 on the regular grid to severity level B on the sex offender grid. At severity level 9, it's an 86-month, 258-month prison sentence, and all are considered presumptive. By moving it to the sex offender grid, the presumptive sentence is 90 to 300 months, and again, those are all presumptive prison. With the second degree offenses, the commission adopted a proposal moving the offenses from the severity level 5 to severity level C on the sex offender grid, and that's on severity level 5, it's an 18-month state sentence to a 48-month prison sentence. And the person would be a presumptive prison committed, a criminal history score of 3 or more. At the severity level C on the sex offender. It's a 48 to 180 month prison sentence, and all are presumptive prison. We calculated the bed impact for these modifications, moving these two offenses, at a 23 bed total by 2017. There would be 6 beds for the severity level B. Basically, that would be longer sentences, and 17 beds for the severity level C, and that that is a higher number of beds, basically because all would be presumed presumptive prison sentences if they were moved to the sex offender grid. So that's a total of 23 beds by year 2017.
Questions from members? Representative Paymer.
Well, I don't want to belabor this, and maybe it's something we just need more information on, but when we ask for a fiscal note, and this is sort of piggybacking on what Representative Coles was talking about, and because I really was careful when I introduced the bill that there would not be a bed impact given the dire financial straits of the state. So when we request a fiscal note, does that come to the Sentencing Guidelines Commission for your, I mean, do you assess that? And you know, I mean, this does bring up some questions about you unilaterally making a decision like this, which may or may not be the right public policy. On the other hand, for a member now to say, I'm going to, for this legislature to back off of something, especially on sex offenders, is highly unlikely. So it sort of puts us in a little bit of a bind here, and I just want to know what the process is so when we have bills like this in the future, I'll know.
Ms. Allegra.
Madam Chair, Representative, we didn't do a fiscal note on the moving these offenses during the session because that was not part of any bill. We so it was something, again, that the commission did as the discussion was brought to them about the prostitution offenses. So we were not asked to, the issue was not in front of us during the session.
Ms. Allegro?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you do fiscal notes for these movements that you're proposing so that you have a fiscal cost? Ms. Allegro?
Madam Chair, yes, we did do a fiscal note on this proposal.
And can you get us a copy of that? That would be great. Or maybe we should send it to Representative Paymar's committee to get a copy of that. But
Madam Chair, maybe you can just tell us what this is going to cost.
Ms. Allegro.
As I indicated, the 23 beds by the year 2017, I don't know what. I'd have to get the, when I say we did a bed impact. We did not cost out, according to Department of Corrections, how much it would actually cost. It was 23 beds.
Maybe you can, Madam Chair, maybe you can get us that information.
That would be great. Representative Bigham.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I have all this going on up here. So you did this adjustment with no legislation, and you did this through your process, and if it's going to proceed unless we reject it?
Ms. Allegro.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Yeah, nothing like being put between a rock and a hard place.
Mr. Representative Skowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of in that thread of discussion, Ms. Allegro, two questions. One is there precedent for this type of policy setting within your organization? And can you tell us a little bit about the foundation upon which the authority is given to you to do this?
Ms. Allegro.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think our chairman indicated in the beginning that there's a number of different ways the commission could act on modifications to the guidelines. One, obviously, is in response to legislation. The other is in response to issues that are brought to the commission by interested parties, and that the moving these offenses to the sex offender grid, that would fall into the category. It was brought to the commission by interested parties, and they acted on it. I have only been with the commission a year, so I'm not aware. I don't know if Chair Edblad knows if we've done something similar. I don't think so. I think this was an unusual case.
Mr. Edblad?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not aware of any situations prior to this as far as the direct question goes.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allegro and Mr. Bled, is it?
Yes.
Thank you. So is there statutory authority? Is it explicitly outlined somewhere in writing that the commission has the ability to make these adjustments according to a citizen group that comes forward?
Ms. Allegro.
Madam Chair, Representative, again, the commission can act on it, and then it's brought to the legislature, and if the legislature would not act adversely, then it would go into effect. But I don't think we, you know, there is that, we're well aware we needed to bring it to the legislature.
Sorry. Are you finished, Representative Druskowski? One last question. Okay, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Allegro, so where is it written that you can do this? What can you point me to the place that says the commission can do this?
I think nonpartisan staff wants to answer that. So, Ms. Perius.
Madam Chair and Representative, the statutory authority is in Section 244.09, Subdivision 11.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think the staff has already answered the question because I was going to comment on that as my 32 years as county attorney. I'm well aware of how this sentencing guidelines ever started and what pavilions are in it.
Representative Paymar.
I just, Madam Chair, just for a little history also. I mean, this is not the first time this has happened. If you remember a few years back during the, there was a committee, a task force that was set up by this legislature to look at the drug grid and drug offenses, and it caused quite a controversy with the sentence. I think that was before your time, but I'm sort of split on this because I really do think the legislature should be making these decisions, but unfortunately I don't think the legislature has the political will sometimes to do things, and so we've sort of turned things over to the Sentencing Guidelines Commission to make these changes. And she's quite right, Ms. Allegro's right. If we don't agree with it, we can stop it. But so I'm not sure if it, you know, if it's helpful or if it gets us off the hook or what the right thing is here. But that, I believe, was some of the intent of the original statute, is to take some of the politics out of these sentencing decisions.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, Ms. Allegro.
Representative
Coles.
Madam Chair, just for my edification, I see that Mr. Battle is a citizen member. Ms. Berman and Ms. Larson are citizen members. Can you tell me, Mr. Edblad or Ms. Allegro, what is their professional background? Are they members of the bar? Are they practicing attorneys?
Ms. Allegro.
Madam Chair, Representative, Ms. Berman is an attorney. Ms. Larson is a citizen representative who was the victim of a crime, and our legislation does provide that one of the citizen members be a victim of a crime. And then Reverend Battle does not have a legal background.
And Ms. Berman, Madam Chair, Ms. Allegro, Ms. Berman's, you said, is a member of the bar. What does she practice in the criminal law area, or is she?
Ms. Allegro.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe she does mainly civil work.
Madam Chair, just a comment. I guess I find it interesting. I guess we're after the fact and after a conviction when we're talking about sentencing, but there aren't any members who I don't see anybody from the public defender's office or is that? I stand corrected. Thank you. Representative Gunther has a constituent who is a public defender, so I apologize. I'm glad to see that, and I agree with what Chair Paymar was saying. This is concerning to me. I actually agree with the decision. I think you made the right decision from a public policy perspective. But the legislature is supposed to set the public policy. I understand you are operating under the current statutory scheme, and I understand to some extent why, but I share your concern, Chair Paymar, that I think we are letting ourselves off the hook, and you know, shame on us for doing that. We should be making these tough decisions. I think we should. I personally, and you and I may disagree on this sometimes, not always, but I don't think we put enough people in prison in Minnesota who commit crimes, and so the bed impact is something that, from a public policy perspective, I'm willing to fight to figure out how to pay for. But that really should be our decision as a legislature. And so I don't want to sound like I'm being too harsh on the commission, but I am very concerned about the separation of powers issue, and I don't suggest that you did anything wrong. In fact, I think you did something right here. But, you know, shame on us for passing the buck.
Members, Gary Carger just brought down a September 25th, 09 estimated prison impact of these changes, and so we'll photocopy it and get it to all of you. So, any further comments, Ms. Allegro?
Did you want me to, Madam Chair, finish my presentation?
sure, why don't you go ahead?
No. I think we've probably gone through most of it, but I just have, there's one other modification, again, that the Commission had made, and this would be another 2010 one that would stand unless the legislature acted to the contrary. We did receive a request from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office to increase the severity level for riot first degree resulting in death. We do not have very many of those cases. The Commission did agree to, in the last, I should say, between 2001 and 2008, there have been two offenses for that particular offense. The Commission did increase the severity level from 5 to severity level 8, figuring it was similar to manslaughter in the second degree, culpable negligence. And we estimated a bed impact of 0 to 2 beds.
Questions from members? Seeing none.
And I will just conclude with a few of the staff activities in 2009. We held 8 training sessions throughout the state and trained over 200 criminal justice practitioners. We responded to 64 data requests. We received those from legislative staff, attorneys. We prepared last year 77 fiscal notes, and also the commission was responsible for ensuring the accuracy of over 15,000 sentencing records.
Further questions from members? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming. Members, this is the last item on the agenda, but we do have one announcement. The Senate has invited us for their hearing on criminal intelligence databases. You all received an email prior. The meeting is today at 3 o'clock in room 15 of the Capitol. If you have not already let us know that you're coming, please let the committee administrator know so that they can bring your name tag. So if there's no further questions, with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Sure.